Morning.
Morning.
Good to get to be together this morning. This evening, we are going to be having a lesson on the most boring book of the entire Bible. Typically, when we think of the most boring book, I think we typically think of the book of Leviticus. And we're going to be looking at that tonight because it's a book that we don't study often because we typically think of it as boring, but I don't know how many of you are aware of it, but we're spending about a month or two right now teaching our kids the book of Leviticus in our classes. And it seems kind of odd that we spend so much time teaching our kids this book when we don't study it ourselves. And so this evening, we're going to get in and we're going to study the book of Leviticus and discover what it's really about and how the things that really apply to us and some things that maybe we shouldn't see as so boring, but see how relevant they really are to change our lives. So make sure you're back tonight. We're going to be doing kind of a sermon on that this evening. This morning, I want to talk about faith again. We've been talking about faith from this idea of growing in our relationship to God. And this morning, I want to dig into that a little bit deeper. Have you ever thought about what it would be like if Jesus had never left earth, if he was still here? Like, imagine if after he was raised, he just stuck around and he continued to maybe visit different churches, and he'd come in on certain Sundays, and he'd talk to us and teach us and maybe work some miracles. How would that change your life? Man, in a lot of ways, it would make things so much easier. I mean, if you had a question, you just wait until the Sunday when Jesus is scheduled to be here, and you can ask him. And think of what it would do for your faith. I mean, all those doubts that maybe you sometimes have, you just come there on the right Sunday and you see Jesus working some miracle, and wouldn't that just shatter all those doubts? Why doesn't he do that? I mean, God could have. I assume God could have done that if he wanted to. So why didn't he? Well, in this lesson, maybe we'll find out some of the reasons. Some of the reasons why God wants us to really walk by faith. I mean, why is it that God leaves us, it feels like, in the dark sometimes? I mean, not totally in the dark, but in a way that we're really having to look and try to see that light that sort of seems far away sometimes. Why does God do that? We're going to be in John chapter 9 this morning, and the title of the lesson is Obstacles to Faith. When we're growing in our faith, there's certain things that are going to get in the way of that growth. And this morning, I want to examine some of those and think of how can we get rid of those obstacles so that we can have the kind of faith that we need to have. This is going to be the kind of lesson that helps us. If you don't believe in Jesus at all, this would certainly help you in that. But all of us who do believe in Jesus, we all understand that faith is not like a one-time thing. It's something you grow in over time. And if I've got these obstacles in my life, it could not only inhibit growth, but it could totally stop growth. So let's start with this verse over here before we get into John 9. Psalm 119, verse 105 says, "Your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path." I love the way this verse, the picture that this verse paints. It's like the earth is very dark. And then as we read the Bible, it's like this light that illuminates things and helps us see the truth. So it's like here we are stumbling around in the darkness. I can't really see where I'm going very well. And then God's word is like this flashlight that shines out and you can see where you're going. It's like if you've ever walked through the woods at night. It's really hard to walk through the woods at night if you don't have a light. But you at least want to bring a flashlight. If you have a flashlight, you kind of navigate that there's a tree, there's a stump, there's a rock, and you can kind of make your way through life. And that's the picture of this verse. Now, you take this concept, and this is from the Old Testament, you see this a number of times in the Old Testament, this idea of God's Word being this illuminating light to help us see. You take it to the New Testament, and here's what you have at the beginning of John. John chapter 1, verse 1 says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." Now, if you've ever studied John 1 very much, what you know is when it says Word here, it's talking about Jesus. That just like how the Bible communicates God's message to us, when Jesus came down, he was the embodiment of that message. He fully communicated it that in just everything about the way he lived. He was this living Word. Okay, next part. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. Exact same picture. Jesus comes to this earth as this light. And here's this dark world. We can't see anything until the light shows up. And it illuminates everything. And then when people came to Jesus, they suddenly saw the reality that they missed all that time before that. John chapter 9 is going to give us a very vivid picture of exactly this. So, turn over to John chapter 9, and let's get into our reading. This is the story of the man who was born blind and then later healed by Jesus, and his whole entire life changes. So let's start in verse 1. John chapter 9, verse 1. As he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth, and his disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" All right, before we get into the obstacles, I want to make two observations about this text. Right here in the first paragraph, we're going to notice two really important keys. The first one is about this discussion between the disciples of Jesus and Jesus. So the disciples of Jesus see this guy who's blind, and they ask Jesus this really odd question. They say, "Why is he blind?" And they give two possible ideas of why this might be. They think, well, maybe he sinned, and that's why he's blind. But there's one problem with that theory. That would work, maybe, if you took that particular view of the world. That might make sense if, let's say, when he turned 20, something happened to him and he turned blind. But what if the guy was born blind? Well, then who sinned? I mean, did he sin when he was in his mom's womb? That seems a little unlikely. So they say, well, maybe his parents sinned. And then maybe, like, because his parents sinned, that he's getting punished for his parents? So you can tell they're thinking through this, and there's a lot of problems. Nothing's really making sense to them. But in their worldview, they're thinking, this is the way it's got to be. So here's the observation I want to start with. My perception of the world may be wrong. Now, that goes without saying, but sometimes we need to say that the way I view the world may not be the right way to view the world. And here's these disciples of Jesus, following Jesus for a while, and I think what you have here is they don't view the world quite right. Here's the way they view the world. They think of, if there's some kind of suffering in the world, that's God punishing sin. That's why there's suffering. If you're hurting, it's God's punishing you. But then they come across someone like the guy who's born blind, and it breaks their whole model of thinking. Like we said, I mean, that just doesn't work with that model. Was it his parents that sinned? Well, then you get a really weird system of justice. And so they're trying to figure this out. And here's what Jesus says. Verse 3. Jesus answered, "It was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him." So they say, all right, Jesus, is it A or is it B? And Jesus says, none of the above. Jesus says, what if we think about it this way? Maybe there's another reason that you never even thought of for why this guy's suffering. And so what Jesus says is, he says it so that God's works could be displayed in him. That God has a purpose for this that's so big and so glorious, maybe you haven't even thought about it yet. And we're about to see it as Jesus suddenly makes him see, and it creates this incredible miracle and brings people to faith through it. So here's what I get from this. A lot of times, we come with these preconceived ideas, like the apostles did. And then it's when something strange happens that it just breaks our model of thinking. And we think, well, I thought the world worked like this. I thought it operated like that. And now it doesn't make sense anymore. And that's exactly what's happening to the apostles here. And the reason we have these misconceptions is because we're living in a dark world where we just don't see a lot of things. And then Jesus comes in as this light of the world, and he starts illuminating the truth. And throughout his ministry, what he's basically doing is he's bringing people from these misconceptions over to the light and saying, look, this is the way it is. Do you guys see it over here? This is what it looks like. And he's slowly breaking their boxes of all these boxes of how they pack things, and he's breaking it all down and saying, let's rebuild it. Let's see it correctly now. All right, let's continue. Here's what he says. Verse 4. For we must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Okay, so here's what he's saying. He's saying, I'm the light. That's what we talked about right at the beginning. Here's the second concept that we really need to understand this chapter. I'm going to describe it as light should lead to action. Jesus says, I am the light of the world. As long as I'm the world, I'm the light of the world. And then he says, while it's day, we've got to be working. Night's coming and then it's going to be too late. While it's day, we need to be doing God's works. So not only is Jesus leading people to light, but he's showing there's a responsibility with being in the light. If you're in the light and you can see, then you need to be doing something with that. And he's going to express that more as we keep going. He's about to heal this guy. He's about to do some of God's works. But he's trying to show us, if I'm living by faith where I actually can see the light, I need to do something with that. All right, let's continue with that concept. Verse 5. As long as I am the world, I am the light of the world. Having said these things, he spit on the ground and made mud with the saliva. Then he anointed the man's eyes with the mud and said to him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which means sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. This is a really weird way to heal this guy. I mean, Jesus healed people in a lot of different ways. I mean, sometimes he just touched them or just speak to them and they were suddenly healed. In this case, Jesus does something quite elaborate. He spits on the ground, mixes up the dirt, mixes it in the mud, takes the mud, sticks it all over his face where it's coating his eyes. I mean, you think about how gross that is. Not only do you have dirt all over your face, but you've got saliva all over your face. So here you've got this gunk all over his face, and then Jesus says, go wash it off. All of that's strange. And then, furthermore, don't just wash it off. Wash it off in a very particular pool. You got to find your way with this mud on your face and you're blind all the way to this pool in some other part of Jerusalem. Go over there, wash it off, and then you're going to see. Why all the elaborate stuff? Well, as we're going to go through the story, I think we're going to see several reasons for it. But the initial reason, just with this blind man, is this is kind of a challenge of faith. That if he wants to be healed, he's got to believe Jesus enough to go walk over to this very specific pool and go wash it off. It really starts to show, illustrate this concept that faith involves action. That the man can say, well, I believe. Well, do you? If you believe, then you're going to go do what Jesus said, and you're going to trust him enough to go do something that physically doesn't make sense. There's no reason why saliva and mud and washing in a pool of Siloam is going to make you well. There's no reason why that would cure blindness. And yet, if he has faith, he's going to do what doesn't seem very likely. He's going to trust that enough to actually lead that into action, actually do what Jesus says. Okay, so that's the beginning of the story. Now let's get into the lessons of obstacles that get in our way. Let's talk about faith in the dark. Here, let's continue reading in verse 8. Verse 8. The neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar were saying, Is this not the man who used to sit and beg? Some said, it is he. Others said, no, but he is like him. He kept saying, I am the man. So they said to him, then how were your eyes opened? He answered, the man called Jesus made mud and anointed my eyes and said to me, go to Siloam and wash. So I went, I washed, and I received my sight. They said to him, where is he? He said, I do not know. Okay, so the guy does it. He goes to the pool, he washes off, and all of a sudden he can see. Here's a guy who's been blind. We're going to find out he's 40 years old. He's been blind his whole entire life, and all of a sudden he can see. And you can just imagine how excited and happy he is. And there's no Jesus. There's no one to thank. He had to go off by himself, and Jesus disappeared, and he doesn't know where he is. And here's what's so beautiful about this story that makes it so relevant, is that just like us putting our faith in Jesus, we don't get to see Jesus. We read about him. We've heard some things he said, but we don't physically get to see him yet. And this guy is in the exact same state. And I think that's one of the reasons why Jesus did this miracle this way. Is it creates this very interesting scenario where Jesus and all the other characters in the story are really in the same situation as you and I. They see some evidence for Jesus, but they don't physically see him. And so that makes this story very relevant for us. That it's there on that same level playing field of who's Jesus? Where is he? Did he really do this? Do we really believe in him? I don't see him. And so here's what they do. It starts with following the evidence. Neighbors, they start asking around. They say, wasn't that the guy that we saw who was blind before? No, it couldn't be. I mean, people don't just get sight when they're blind. Well, but he looks the same. Maybe he's a guy who looks different. But and they start trying to figure all this out. They start putting the evidence together. And so here's all these different people who are sort of coming to faith through looking step by step at the evidence. And we're going to see that the blind man's going to do the same thing. He's going to have to build his faith by putting together the pieces. Now, here's why this is so relevant. We are in such a similar situation. Sometimes people have the misconception that faith is just sort of like a wish, that I want it to be true, and so I'm just going to believe it because I want it to be true. Or that faith is just this sort of thing that you just will yourself to believe. In the Bible, faith is much more about looking at the evidence and learning to trust God. That when Jesus wanted people to believe, he gave them reasons to believe. Now, he made them use their brains. He made them think about it and put the puzzle pieces together. But he gave them something to tie that faith onto. And in the book of Acts, when Paul was going around the world converting people, the way he did it was, if they believed in the scriptures in the Old Testament, he'd take the Old Testament and he'd say, all right, let me prove to you that Jesus is who he says he was. Turn over to this. And he'd show them. And he'd show them that passage and he'd start trying to convince them to believe in Jesus. That's the way biblical faith is built. It's by taking evidences and thinking about them and putting them together and learning to trust in God. And that, for each of us, that may come in different ways. It may be that we've read the Bible a lot and we've learned to trust what it says. It may be looking around at the world and seeing that there seems to be evidence that we didn't just appear here, that there was someone creating all of this. It may be experiences in our own life that we can see that God's taken us through things, and maybe that's strengthened our faith over time. It may be a whole variety of different things, but typically, if you're going to have a strong faith, it's going to be built on more than just, well, my parents told me to believe. It's going to be built on there's actually a reason why I believe. I've thought about it. I've taken a lot of time to think about it and think this through and think the positives and the negatives and think, is God someone who I can trust? All right, let's keep going with that thought. Verse 13. They brought to the Pharisees the man who had formerly been blind. Now, it was a Sabbath day when Jesus made the mud and opened his eyes. So the Pharisees again asked him how he had received his sight. And he said to them, he put mud on my eyes, and I washed, and I see. Some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath. But others said, how can a man who is a sinner do such signs? And there was a division among them. All right, again, we're weighing the evidence. You've got all these different parties here. You've got the neighbors, you've got the Pharisees. They're all looking at the evidence. But certain people are following it and getting towards Jesus, and certain people are missing it. So, here's the big thing we're going to look at in this lesson. What's getting in the way? First of all, here's the Pharisees. They have the evidence right in front of them. Same evidence that everybody else has. But they interpret it just a bit differently. They say, we don't see how this guy could be from God. You say he's doing miracles. We don't see how that could be the case because he's breaking the Sabbath day. And they explain this. So here's the issue. On the Sabbath day, according to the old law, according to the Jews, you were not allowed to do any work. And so here the Pharisees hear this and they think, well, okay, so he spit on the ground and mixed up some mud. That sounds like work. You're mixing something, making something. That's work. And he did it on the Sabbath. That's a sin. Therefore, he's not from God. All right, what's wrong with that logic? In one sense, it makes perfect logical sense. In one sense, if you take all of those pieces, if those are the pieces you have to work with, you put that together, you can see how you come to that conclusion. There's only one problem. Some of those pieces are wrong. According to the old law, you couldn't work. It was, I mean, very strictly prohibited. In fact, there was even an account in the Old Testament when somebody was gathering some sticks and building a fire, and they received the death penalty. And you say, whoa, that's serious. It was really serious for God. God wanted to show them that on this day, this is about me. It is not about you. You don't go do your own things. This is about me. Now, here's the problem. The people took that and they expanded it and they made it into not about God, but about let's keep this specific law in a specific way. And each time when Jesus broke the Sabbath, what he tried to show the people was if you're keeping the Sabbath is keeping you from loving God or loving people, you miss the point of the Sabbath. Now, God never specifically said you can't make mud on the Sabbath. He never said that. So that was expansion of it. And what Jesus had tried to show them over and over is, like there was a time he healed someone in the synagogue, and then he said, told them, is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath or to do evil? If you think that you can't do a good thing because it's Saturday, maybe you've missed the point of the Sabbath. And that's exactly the problem the Pharisees had fallen into. They had this conception of here's what the Sabbath day is, and it was wrong. And because they had that misconception, it led them away from all these other things. It led them away from Jesus. All right, here's why this is so serious. All of us have different preconceived ideas. If you're an atheist, one of the preconceived ideas you might have as an atheist is miracles can't happen. If someone tells you about a miracle happening, well, I know those can't happen, so we'll discard that piece of evidence. If you're someone who was raised in a religious background, you may think, well, I don't have any preconceived ideas. I was raised reading this. My guess is there's not anyone who's raised in any religious background where they were taught absolutely everything exactly right. You think, well, I grew up in the perfect family. I mean, they taught me everything exactly right. I mean, we're all humans. There's probably something that I was taught that was wrong. Probably something you were taught that was wrong, that you grew up thinking it was this way. And if you study the Bible enough, you'll find out it's not that way. And if I hold on to my preconceived idea and say, I know this is right, I've always believed this was right, I'm going to miss it. There's going to be that message that God wants me to see, and I'm going to totally miss it. And this story illustrates how just a small misunderstanding, I mean just a misunderstanding about what you could do on the Sabbath day, led them away from Jesus. That here, because they hold this view that, well, that can't be right, they totally missed the huge thing that was right in front of them, that here's the Son of God come to earth. All right, so that's the first thing, is I need to be really, really careful about what are those preconceived ideas that I have. Those could get in the way of me understanding the truth. Let's continue. Back on to verse 17. So they said again to the blind man, what do you say about him, since he has opened your eyes? He said, he is a prophet. So the Pharisees go back to the blind man, and they say, all right, what do you believe? And here's what he does. He just follows the evidence, and he says, I think he's a prophet. Now, why does he come to that idea? Did Jesus say, I'm a prophet? No, it was he said, well, let's see, I was blind, I know I'm seeing, there's a miracle taking place. Sounds to me like he's a prophet. So here's a guy, he doesn't have all the pieces together yet. Jesus was a whole lot more than a prophet. But it's these baby steps. That when I'm following the evidence, there's going to be these baby steps of faith. Let's keep going here. Verse 18. The Jews did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight until they called the parents of the man who had received his sight and asked them, is this your son who you say was born blind? How then does he now see? His parents answered, we know that this is our son, and that he was born blind, but how he now sees, we do not know. Nor do we know who opened his eyes. Ask him. He is of age. He will speak for himself. All right, so this is really interesting. So here's the parents. They're supposed to verify, was he your son? Was he born blind? Does he now see? They say, yes, 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 yes. How did he see? I don't know. Well, why don't you know? And now here it's going to tell us, verse 22. His parents said these things because they had feared the Jews, For the Jews already agreed that if anyone should confess that Jesus was the Christ, he was to be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, his parents said, he is of age, ask him. And here we get to the second big problem. One of the things that can keep us from faith is fear. I mean, they got it. The parents understood. It was their kid. They knew that he was blind. They had to be overjoyed, their child who'd never seen before, for him to finally see. They had to know that was miraculous. And yet all they could say was, I don't know. What was holding them back? They were afraid. They were afraid of how people would look at them. They were afraid of the consequences. If I do this, then they're going to not let me in the synagogue anymore. And that's such a problem. That the evidence may be right there in front of me. That there may be perfectly good reason for me to believe what God said to me. But I don't want to believe it. And the reason I don't want to believe it is because it's going to have bad consequences. I'm going to have to change, and it's going to hurt if I change. Or I'm going to do this, and then people are going to look at me differently, and they're going to act differently with me, and it's going to cause problems, and it's going to mess up things in maybe my family or around my friends or in the church or whatever. It's going to cause issues, and I don't want that. I'm afraid of that. And so I never change. And when I'm like this, then I just keep going the same way I've always gone, and it's the wrong way. Because God's saying, over here, hello, over here. All right, that's the second one. Third one, verse 24. So for the second time, they called the man who had been blind and said to him, give glory to God. We know that this man is a sinner. He answered, whether he is a sinner, I do not know. One thing I do know, that though he was blind, now I see. They said to him, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? He answered them, I have told you already, and you would not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciple? And they reviled him, saying, You are his disciple, but we are disciples of Moses. We know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we do not know where he comes from. The man answered, why, this is an amazing thing. You do not know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners. But if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, God listens to him. Never since the beginning of the world has it been heard that anyone would open the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. They answered him, you were born in utter sin, and would you teach us? And they cast him out. Really interesting exchange here. So here's the Pharisees arguing with the man, and the man's making such great points. I mean, all along he's saying, Don't you see it, guys? I was blind, now I see. Why can't you see the evidence? And they ended with this thing of, you were born in utter sin, and you think you can teach us? Now, I assume they're going back to what the disciples thought then. You must have been sinning if you're born blind. But it's pretty obvious what the problem is here. There's a lot of pride in the way. If this guy's presenting evidence to them and they're saying, we don't need to listen to you, what's that tell you about them? There's a whole lot of pride in the way. That right now they're thinking, we're up here, we're so much smarter, and you're so much dumber. As long as I've got this pride issue where I think I'm smarter, better, nicer than other people, it's going to keep me from letting anyone teach me anything. That it may be that there's something that God really wants me to learn, really wants me to grow in my faith, but if I have the kind of pride that I think I'm smarter than other people, I'm never going to see it. And I'm going to have that blindfold on just like the Pharisees did. Okay, let's keep going here. Verse 34. They answered him, you were born in utter sin, and would you teach us? And they cast him out. So back to the blind man again. Here he is following the evidence. He presents to them, here's the truth, here's the way I see it. And what do? They cast him out of the synagogue. And what's interesting to me about this is if I have genuine faith and I'm just following wherever it's going to lead me, wherever God has shown me, that's where I'm going to go, it's going to lead to sacrifice. Now, if I'm the kind of person who, when I'm afraid of that, I'm afraid of sacrifice, I'm not going to follow the evidence. But if I'm honest enough to follow the evidence, it's going to lead to some pretty severe sacrifices. And that's exactly what happens to this guy. He's barred from the synagogue. He's not allowed to come back in and worship with everyone anymore. So here's this guy. He's now an outcast. He believes in Jesus because Jesus opened his eyes, but now he's shut out from all the social circles he used to be a part of. And at this point, Jesus finally comes back on the scene. And here's what he says, verse 35. Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and having found him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" He answered, "And who is he, sir, that I may believe in him?" Jesus said to him, "You have seen him, and it is he who is speaking to you." He said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. Here's the beautiful triumph of faith. Here's a guy who's been following the footsteps all along, following the evidences, trying to piece it together, knowing, I know there was a guy who opened my eyes. I don't have all the facts. I don't know exactly who he was. I don't know where he is. But I know there's something special there. And even if he casts me out of the synagogue, I'm still going to keep following that evidence. And he finally gets all the way here, and it leads him right to the light. And Jesus says, "I'm the Son of Man." And he says, "I believe." And he falls down and he worships him. And then Jesus, the way he says this is so beautiful. He says, "You have seen him, and it's he who's speaking to you." Now, I would have flipped that around. I would have said, "You have heard him, and now you see him." But he says, past tense, "You have seen him, and now you're hearing him." What happened? It's like Jesus is trying to clue us in. This guy, even though he was blind, even though Jesus wasn't even around, this guy saw Jesus. This guy, through the eyes of faith, was seeing what nobody else was seeing. That's what true sight was. It didn't matter that Jesus wasn't in the room. It didn't matter that he couldn't find Jesus anywhere in Jerusalem. What mattered was he could see him by faith. Okay, now Jesus is going to give us the grand conclusion. Verse 39. Let's finish it up. Jesus said, "For judgment I came into the world, that those who do not see may see, and those who see may become blind." All right, here's what Jesus is going to do. He says, "I came into the world for judgment." Now, judgment in the Bible usually has this kind of differentiating, separating. That you separate one people into one group and different group people into a different group. And Jesus says, that's what I came in the world to do. I came to separate two groups of people. There's the people who see, and there's the people who don't see. And I'm going to do a big switcheroo, and everybody who sees is going to suddenly become blind, and everyone who's blind is going to suddenly become seeing. And we're thinking, what? What do you mean? How does that work? And here's the answer to it. Verse 40. Some of the Pharisees near him heard these things, and they said to him, "Are we also blind?" Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would have no guilt. But now that you say, 'We see,' your guilt remains." All right, here's what Jesus does. We started out by noticing we're all in the dark. We're in a really dark world. If we're not using that light to see, we don't see anything. But if we're like the Pharisees, here's the Pharisees. They're sitting in the middle of that dark, pitch-black room, and they say, "I can see fine." And Jesus says, if you're doing that, you're going to be totally blind, and you're going to stay that way. But if you're sitting in the dark and you're saying, "I can't see anything, I think I'm blind," that's when Jesus can come and open your eyes. That's the key. Here's what Jesus was trying to show them, that in order to find the light, you have to first admit, "I'm blind." That's the only way to get there. And the problem we so often have that keeps us from coming initially to faith at all, or keeps us from growing in faith, is I keep walking around thinking, "I can see just fine. I know exactly what's going on here." And God's like, "No, you're not seeing by faith. You think you're seeing, you're missing it. Don't you see you're in the dark?" It's not until I have the humility to admit, "I can't see. Jesus, I need you to help me see. Jesus, teach me how to see. Show me what the... illuminate my path here." Until I have the humility to do that, I'm never going to learn to see. And maybe that's some of the reason why God wants us to live by faith so much. That this process of having to walk by faith, it does have this judgment kind of thing. that if I'm really proud and I'm holding on to those preconceived ideas and my heart's just kind of not really wanting to follow Jesus, I'm going to have a really easy time just not seeing him. But if I have the humility to want to search and want to say, I don't get it. Show me some evidence. Let me follow the evidence. Let me put the pieces together. Let me humbly try to find where Jesus is. That's the kind of person who's going to find Christ. So, here's the question for each of us. Do you have the humility to admit that you're blind? Have the humility to admit that there's some things that maybe I don't always see right. And God, I need you to teach me the truth. Help me find the truth. It may be that you're a Christian and you need that humility, or it may be that you're not even a Christian and you need to come to the light. If you're not a Christian, then we invite you to come forward and to admit your own blindness and to say, I need to see, and come forward and be baptized into Jesus, believing in him and having your sins all cleansed and washed away and beginning a new life of seeing. If you're subject to that invitation, then please come forward while we stand and while we sing.